Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here.
Welcome to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. I am Fanny Crawford.
And I'm Stasi Okowski.
And we are glad you're our listeners today. Yeah. Our theme is traditional tales on Martin Luther King's birthday. Today is January 15th, 2024. And it's good to be here.
it really is. I guess a lot of times people say, well, it's good to be anywhere. But
it's good to be here.
It's always good to be here on Mondays.
I do have, I guess, a couple announcements. Let's see if I can remember the numbers associated with these announcements. The first one is that I will be telling stories at the Children's Story Hour at the main Washington County Library, the Hagerstown Library, the Fletcher Library, downtown Hagerstown, on February 9th. And I will have friends with me, fellow storytellers from the Black Storytellers of Western Maryland. And it is the Black Storytellers of Western Maryland's first appearance at the library. And I'm looking forward to that a lot. The National Women's Storytelling Festival is coming up March 14th through the 17th, if I have my dates correct. And I will be telling there. And I'm really excited about that because it's such a wonderful event. And then I'm also telling for the AAUW, American Association of University Women of Washington County, at Christ Reformed Church in downtown Hagerstown on the 17th of February. So for me, that's a full schedule.
What time is that thing on the 9th?
11 o'clock.
Okay. Okay. I was taking notes.
Excellent. Now tell us your schedule.
My
tell
schedule.
Us about Speak.
Speak. Okay. Speak Stories series starts up season 12 in February with Gail Ross. In March, Peter Cook, a deaf storyteller. I'm looking forward to that. I believe I've seen him.
Yeah, I have.
In Jonesboro. And I remember being so impressed. And then in April, Antonio Raja. Oh boy. I've seen him a number of times. And the first time I just sat, and I hope I didn't drool, but I know my mouth was open the whole time. I was just like, I remember being so impressed by him, you know. In May, Elizabeth Rose. In June, Dolores Hydock.
And help.
In July, a thing called The Crankies with Catherine Faye and Daniel Van Allen. And I actually performed with Susan Connolly Holstein, who did Crankies at Susan Gordon's. She and I did a Christmas show a few years ago.
I wasn't there, but I remember hearing about that. That was really
cool. It was really cool. And if I was still doing, you know, like libraries and stuff, I would make a cranky box. But because it's really a cool thing to do, you know. It takes a lot of work unless you have a good friend or a partner who is an artist and they can take a roll of paper and do some scenes for you. so you can show them. But anyway, it's a neat idea. And in August, Eileen Evans, your mentor, your good friend. And in September, we don't know. It's Adam is working on something special for that. In October, Adam Booth and a special guest. Again, we don't know who yet. Adam knows, we don't. And then in November, the winner of the 2024 Speak Story Series Commission. And that process is going on right now. And hopefully by the end of February, that person will be chosen. And the person and will be, in November, will do a world premiere of a brand new story that they will be paid, they will receive a prize for being selected, and they will also be paid to come to Shepherdstown and do the performance. So details at www.speakstoryseries.com, details might be on the website right now, but if not, they will be there shortly, because we're going to be in a new facility, new to speak, and Adam has gone to great lengths to get some very good new equipment and someone to operate it who's been hired to make sure that all of the speak presentations that go out through Zoom will be perfect. There will be tested the morning and the afternoon of the performance to make sure. And that's going to be because we're in a new place and we'll be able to control the conditions. So
that's good.
That's wonderful. I keep saying we'll, as if I was part of it. I'm no longer part of the board, but I am a supporter of Speak Story Series.
I bet they miss you.
They probably do, because who knows? Somebody always needs a person like me around to talk, since I become known for that. Anyway, no, I'd like to work for it very much. And so, are we ready to start?
Yeah. Do you want to tell a story?
Well, I would like to start with some things I learned about Martin Luther King.
Today is Martin Luther King's birthday.
Right. And it is a national holiday. And I dug into some information that was available to me. And I was looking for things to talk about Martin Luther King, because in my lifetime has been an important person, of course, and a famous person who's made a real impact. So these are a number of things about Martin Luther King. Martin Luther King, in 1963, he was named as the first Black person as Time's Man of the Year. Of course, that award now by Time has been changed to Person of the Year, because I guess a light bulb went on. They said, oh, wow, we named a Black person a man, Time of the Year, Time's Man of the Year. Oh, maybe we should think that it's okay now to talk about maybe a woman could be the Person of the Year. And of course, they have since gotten into the enlightened era of, and I think that is a typical thing, that Black people come before women. I don't think that's, yeah. I don't mean that as that's the way it should be, but I think historically that's what happens. The Blacks got to vote before women and stuff like that. So, anyway,
on paper. Enough.
Right. Oh yes. Right. Okay. All these are things that are supposed to be. Okay. Also in 1963, and I found this interesting, originally the speech that everybody knows as "I Have a Dream," was not the title of that speech. While Martin Luther King was preparing to give that speech, and it was a celebration that day, and this happened to be an important day to me because it was on my birthday in 1963, and because I was a college student then, I had just finished my first year of college on my birthday in 1963 was the day of the Civil Speech. But what I learned was that he had a kind of ordinary title for his speech that he hadn't said anything about to anybody, but Mahalia Jackson had performed at that gathering in Washington. 250,000 people were there. And as he was about to speak, Mahalia Jackson called out, "Tell him about the dream, Martin." And so he did. In 1958, this is before that time, 5 years before that, in September of 1958, Martin Luther King was stabbed by a 42-year-old black woman named Isola Curry. And she stabbed him in the chest. Fortunately, the thing she stabbed him with, the handle broke off, and it stopped just a fraction of a centimeter before it hit his heart. If he had coughed or had some kind of weird reaction to it, luckily he didn't, he might have been much more seriously injured. It was bad enough it went through his chest. And the reason that this woman did that was she was mentally unbalanced. She wound up being put into an institution and died in the year 2015. But she was convinced at that time, and I think forever, that the people in the civil rights movement were being run by communists. And she was against communism, which would make a lot of sense in the 1950s for a lot of people against communism. Okay, in 1983, Martin Luther King is the only non-president whose birthday is a national holiday. And that is interesting.
What was the date you put on that?
January 15th, not January, 1983. Is when the holiday was officially stated,
right?
I think that was interesting, and I started looking around to see, because I thought if anybody had said that, I would have said, yeah, we have a lot of national holidays. We have holidays for everything, so of course there's got to be something about there's got to be other people other than presidents. But he's the only one, which is nice. When he was only 15 years old, he was admitted to Morehouse College, a traditionally black college for black students. And at the time, he was reluctant to become a minister, even though his father was a minister and his, I believe his grandfather was a minister in church. But teachers at Morehouse convinced him to that he should follow that path, and he eventually did go to seminary school. I think Crozier, in University of Pittsburgh, University of Pennsylvania. Sorry. It was interesting in the article I found about that. It said that at first he was reluctant, he was shying away from becoming a minister because he thought that the way that the minister spoke in the church he was brought up, and of course his father and other ministers, that he didn't like their style. That he thought it was too kind of, you know, I don't know, too bravado and stuff, you know, and all the shouting and stuff, and but he eventually gave in and did get and become a minister. Okay. In his lifetime, he was arrested 30 times, all because of civil rights demonstrations, or if the police could take a chance, could catch him doing anything that they could find fault with. He once in Montgomery, Alabama, was caught going slightly over 25 miles per hour in Montgomery, Alabama, and the police pulled him over and took him to jail, driving a car. So his family to this day are convinced that James Earl Ray was not the person who killed him, that James Earl Ray was framed for that. In fact, they won a court case in one of the southern states that found that it was a conspiracy and that he was killed. And they were awarded what they asked for. They asked for $100. The reason his family did that was they felt strongly about how he was killed, and that they thought that James Earl Ray had been framed and that it was a conspiracy. And they didn't want money. They just wanted proof. And apparently the court decided that it was a conspiracy. I don't think anyone ever got punished for it, though. In 1964, Martin Luther King was the youngest person to win the Nobel Peace Prize. That was it, and I knew that he won the Nobel Peace Prize. I didn't know that he was the youngest person. I did not know what his age was when he was doing his in the middle of that civil rights movement. The last thing I found out, that there are lots more you could find out, I guess, but his name was Michael King Jr. And that was his father's name. But when he was 5 years old, both he and his father had both of their names changed, because his father had gone on a kind of a pilgrimage, a religious retreat thing in Europe. And he was so impressed by part of the conference that he went to was about, he was introduced to lots of information about Martin Luther, the reformers, the priest who caused a great reform in the Catholic Church and in Christianity by starting the Lutherans. And that's not exactly how he did it. Martin Luther posted his 95 theses on the door of the church and became instantly both a pariah and a hero, because he made the Catholic Church have to take a look at themselves. Martin Luther King's father was so impressed by that that he decided that his name should be Martin Luther King, and his son's name should be Martin Luther King Jr. And so all that was, I thought that was very impressive.
Kind of a born again moment.
Yeah, a neat thing. That's like, I'm glad nobody ever changed my name. I'm really, you know, all my life I've had a struggle about my name because people can never pronounce it. You know, I still to this day people can't pronounce my name. I go to the doctor's office, and when the nurse comes out and says, I say it's me. But I have noticed in Martinsburg's a unique thing. In Martinsburg, I go to the medical center here that is associated with West Virginia University. And each of the doctor's offices I've visited there, they make it a point of asking you, what would you like to be called? So instead of using my first name as Stanislaus, I use my nickname, which is Stosh. And lately, the last couple of appointments I've been to, the nurse has opened the door and said, "Stosh," which is wonderful, which is nice. Instead, and it's also good for them. Somebody
Yes.
in that office was smart, you know, because they really do look confused when they can't pronounce someone's name.
Can you give me a time check? Because
yes,
I think
we've
I'm
been
wrong.
on the air, according to my time, since you started. We've been on the air for 20 minutes.
Okay.
Wow. That's right now, it's exactly 20 minutes.
Good to know. All right, we're moving right along again.
Yes.
So shall I share a piece?
I think you should.
I guess we could say this is enlightenedradio.org, and I'm Fanny Crawford.
And I'm Stasz Jelkowski, and we should thank Andy Offutt-Irwin
oh,
for
we
opening
should.
the show with Tarry Here, his original composition. He's singing the words and playing the music on his guitar. And it's very generous of him to allow us to use that wonderful piece of music. Almost anybody
Great.
else I can imagine would charge us. Or else we would have had to sing it ourselves.
Well, not unless he gave us permission. Yeah.
Well, of course he would give us permission.
Okay. All right. Well, our theme today, of course, is traditional tales for on Martin Luther King's birthday. And I'm going to tell a semi-traditional tale that I learned from a wonderful storyteller, Baba Jamal Khorram. And Baba Jamal is a guy I met. Actually, you mentioned Eileen Evans earlier in the show as someone who's coming to do a speak performance later this year. And I met Baba Jamal through Eileen Evans. And I will always be grateful for that introduction. I heard him tell at Jonesboro. I've heard him tell multiple times locally, and especially at the National Association of Black Storytellers, which is his, I think that's probably his favorite venue for telling stories, especially when the kids in the audience. You can find him online at griotstoryman.com, GRIOTSTORYMAN.com. And he is the recipient of the highest award of the National Association of Black Storytellers, otherwise known as NABS, the acronym, the Zora Neale Hurston Award, as well as several other honorary titles from them, and also has the National Storytelling Network's Circle of Excellence Oracle Award. So this guy is well respected by the community of tellers and listeners. He's been honored by the National Storytelling Festival in Jonesboro in Tennessee, by the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C., the African American Smithsonian Museum in Washington, and by schools in Ghana, Mali, South Africa, and Germany. And he is a certified cultural systems development specialist. He trained for that role after he'd been doing it a while on his own. And he's also an integrated arts teacher and practitioner with multiple higher ed degrees. But above all, he is a storyteller and a drummer. And when I've talked about Baba Jamal before, I haven't talked much about his drumming expertise or his drumming circles, but he does lead classes and drumming circles for both adults and children, talks about the importance of drumming traditions for storytelling and as a means of communication. But most important to me, Baba Jamal has for many years mentored dozens of storytellers and shared his stories with thousands and thousands of people around the world. So this is Baba Jamal's story, Anansi Brings Help. Copyright 2012. And I might say more about that year at the end. We'll see if we have time. Baba Jamal starts this story saying, "This is a story about hunger. You know Anansi, the spider, does good to man, does bad to the spiders. You can catch him anywhere around the world. Anansi couldn't get to sleep. Something was in the air, in the atmosphere. It felt like some bad news was coming. Sure enough, it came on the drum line, drum talk filling up the air, drums from afar, African drums from afar, relieving the anxiety of drumming hands, sending out sorrowful sounds from the Sudan. African children were starving and being chased by vultures and two-legged animals of prey. Anansi couldn't believe his ears. He ran to King Brother Lion. 'Did you hear it? Can you believe it? What are we gonna do?' King Brother Lion said, 'Well, what do you think, Brother Anansi?' Anansi said, 'They had to get in touch with the sisters of care, the women who care, and then send out a call for the people to gather, for the wisdom of many hurries a decision, helps make a decision.' And the drum call went out. Drums that could be heard for 50 miles, drums heard for 100 miles sounded the gathering. But these were the days that people had given up their culture and let their traditions dust away. So many of them got the message mixed up. Folks in the valley heard they were going to hold an election. Folks up on the mountain heard there was a concert tonight. Folks over in the forest heard they were giving out free food right there. Folks by the desert heard there was going to be a family reunion. Only a few by the ocean understood that there were babies starving in the Sudan and something had to be done about it tonight. It took 3 days for everyone to gather that was coming. Hundreds of thousands of people answered the call. King Brother Lion up on the hill spoke first. His voice rolled down the hillside and across the ears of all assembled. 'You all got the message about our children in the Sudan starving to death. And you know if the children are starving, the grown folks are dropping fast. We gather to decide what we're going to do. Brian announced you... You all know him. He's going to run this meeting.' Before Anansi could get up, folks were complaining and loud. 'What? I thought we were gonna get the food here. My children are hungry too.' Somebody else said, 'I thought this was going to be a concert. Where's Rick James and Ashford and Simpson? Where's Hugh Mansakela? We're 25 cents. That's 50 cents, half brother. You know, folks started leaving. Anansi tried to get them to stay, but King Brother Lion shook his mane as if to say, 'Let them go. We deal with them later. Work with what we got here.' 'What are we gonna do?' Anansi called out to those folks left. One sister said, 'I got some harvest to give, but how are we going to get it there?' 'I got a couple trucks,' said a brother. And my uncle has a few trucks too. My cultural arts group can go there to relieve some of the suffering,' said another. We can build shelters for those who've been orphaned,' said another. And I'll get some mamas and babas together to care for the families,' said another. We can give $10,000, said a family group. People were offering, and Anansi was organizing. It wasn't too long after that that a caravan left for the Sudan. They stayed for about 3 months and did what they could. It wasn't a whole lot, but it was what they could do, and it helped, and it was appreciated. And the African one, who some folks call God, was pleased. You see, Reverend Fauntleroy once said, if everyone does a little, no one has to do a lot, and the job will get done. When they returned home, and Anansi and King Brother Lion planned food and economic programs so no one would go hungry in their lands. Another plan they put into place was a drum language program. So like water, drumming could help form from the dust of traditions. It would form a powerful defensive lifeline. In other words, so people will understand what the drums are saying next time. Well, that's what came to me. And now I have a question for you. Who is hungry where you are? What are you going to do?
Great story.
Isn't that wonderful?
It is a great story.
So that's dedicated to Martin Luther King. That's Baba Jamal Karam's story. And I wish he were here with us today.
Yeah, that would have been nice. And that made me think of something, which is, I think it's appropriate. Drumming. I've only seen drumming whenever I've been in the presence of a Black storyteller, except for one other storyteller.
Who was the other storyteller?
Jim May.
Oh, yeah.
Jim That's May right. is really great at drumming and telling a story. And I never even dawned on me to ask him about it. You know, I've known Jim for years. I haven't spoken to him for a long time, but he's been at my house, been at your house, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And he's done workshops a couple places for me. I just remember how interesting it was that he would tell a story in drum. And I don't think there are that many people who do that. I'm just guessing that it is regarded as an African-American thing.
Well, I think that's the cult. There are Black societies, Black traditions in right. Africa that honor drumming and use drumming regularly, and certainly at NABS, at the National Association for Black Storytellers, drumming is a huge part of right. the conference every year, and there's often drumming instruction going on there. Mm-hmm. But I'm pretty sure I have seen tellers who are not Black, but I can't remember who or what when.
I'll have to
think about that.
Yeah, but anyway, and that's maybe we'll start something here. Maybe somebody listening today will say, "Hey, I'm gonna get a drum," and you don't need to get a drum. You can get a can, you know, and get a 5 gallon, one of those 5 gallon paint buckets turned upside down. That's what a lot of people do out on the streets,
right.
who are using that as for, you know, as a form of drum. Anyway, it was good. I enjoyed the story very much, and it stimulated my question about the, have you ever seen anything? So
are you ready?
We got a traditional tale, which is not going to, you know, make any great connection to Martin Luther King, except it has to do with a kind of justice.
Well, I would say that that's very related.
Yes, yeah, that is. Okay, so here we go. And you, I know you have heard me tell this, but I don't think I've ever done this. I don't know if I've done this on radio before or not, but if I have, it's been years ago. Lady Mary was young and Lady Mary was fair. She had two brothers and more lovers than she could count. But of them all, the bravest and most gallant was a Mr. Fox, whom she met when she was down at her father's country house. No one knew who Mr. Fox was, but he was certainly brave and surely rich. And of all of her many admirers, Lady Mary cared for him alone. At last it was agreed upon between them that they should be married. Lady Mary asked Mr. Fox where they should live, and he described to her his castle and where it was, but strange to say, did not ask her or her brothers to come and see it. So one day, near the wedding day, when her brothers were out and Mr. Fox was away for a day or two on business, as he said, Lady Mary set out for Mr. Fox's castle. And after many searchings, she came at last to it. And a fine, strong house it was, with high walls and a deep moat. And when she came up to the gate, she saw written on it, "Be bold, be bold." But as the gate was open, she went through it, found no one there. So she went up to the doorway, and over it she found written, be bold, but not too bold. Still, she went on till she came into the hall and went up the broad stairs till she came to a door in the gallery, over which was written, be bold, but not too bold, lest that your heart's blood should run cold. But Lady Mary was a brave one. She was. And she opened the door, and what do you think she saw? Why, skeletons and a young, small skeletons. And she guessed they were skeletons of women. Vats filled with bones. And Lady Mary thought it was high time to get out of that horrid place. And she closed the door and went through the gallery and was just going down the stairs and out of the hall when who should she see through a window above the main door entrance? Mr. Fox was dragging a beautiful young lady along from the gateway to the door. Lady Mary rushed downstairs and hid herself behind a cask under the stairs, just as Mr. Fox came in with the poor young lady, who seemed to have fainted. Just as he got near Lady Mary, Mr. Fox saw a diamond ring glittering on the finger of the young lady he was dragging, and he tried to pull it off, but it was tightly fixed and would not come off. So Mr. Fox cursed and swore and drew his sword, raised it, and brought it down upon the hand of the poor lady. The sword cut off the hand, which went up in the air and fell, of all places in the world, into Lady Mary's lap. Mr. Fox looked about a bit, but did not think of looking behind the cask. So at last he went on dragging the young lady up the stairs into the bloody chamber. As soon as she heard him pass through the gallery, Lady Mary crept out of the door, down through the gateway, and ran home as fast as she could. Now, it happened that the very next day, the marriage contract of Lady Mary and Mr. Fox was to be signed. There was a splendid breakfast before that. Mr. Fox was seated at a table opposite Lady Mary. He looked at her. "How pale you are, my dear." "Yes, I am. I had a bad night. Well, didn't rest much at all last night. I had horrible dreams." Dreams go to contrary, said Mr. Fox, but tell us your dreams and your sweet voice will make the time pass till a happy hour comes. I dreamed, said Lady Mary, that I went yesterday to your castle, and I found it deep in the woods, with high walls and a deep moat, and over the gateway there was written, be bold, be bold. And Mr. Fox said, but it is not so, nor it was not so. And Lady Mary went on, and when I came to the doorway over it, it was written, be bold, but not too bold. Mr. Fox spoke up, it is not so, nor it was not so. And then Lady Mary continued and said, and then I went upstairs and came to a gallery at the end of which was a door on which was written, be bold, but not too bold, lest that your heart's blood should run cold. It is not so, nor it was not so, said Mr. Fox. And Lady Mary continued again. And then I opened the door, and the room was filled with skeletons and bones and all stained with blood. It is not so, nor it was not so. And God forbid it should be so, said Mr. Fox. Lady Mary continued, I then dreamed that I rushed down the gallery. Just as I was going down the stairs, I saw you, Mr. Fox, coming up to the hall door, dragging after you a poor young lady, rich and beautiful. It is not so, nor it was not so. And God forbid it should be so, said Mr. Fox. Lady Mary continued, I rushed downstairs just in time to hide myself behind a cask. When you, Mr. Fox, came in dragging the young lady by the arm. And as you passed me, Mr. Fox, I thought I saw you try and get off her diamond ring. And when you could not, it seemed to me in my dream that you took out your sword and hacked off the poor lady's hand to get the ring. It is not so, nor was it so, said Mr. Fox. And was going to say something else as he rose from his seat when Lady Mary cried out, but it is so, and it was so. Here's the hand and ring I have to show. And pulled out the lady's hand from her dress and pointed it straight at Mr. Fox. At once her brothers and her friends drew their swords and cut Mr. Fox into 1,000 pieces. And it was done, and it is so. And that's my tale.
That is such a horrible, horrible vision.
One of my favorites to tell.
Oh, my goodness.
I told that at Three Rivers Storytelling at the ghost story, ghost tales on Saturday night. And they had a unique place in a courtyard kind of the school where we had the festival. And there were chairs spread around in between two buildings. So it was all enclosed and they had a fire. It was really wonderful. And 3 years in a row, I told stories at the ghost stories at that. And Mr. Fox was very well received there.
Do you know anything about the origin of that story?
Only that it's mentioned in one of Shakespeare's plays.
Oh, really?
It actually is. In one of Shakespeare's plays, I forget which one it is. I should have looked that up, but I hadn't been thinking about saying anything about it other than the tale. But in one of Shakespeare's plays, one of the characters says, it reminds me of the tale of Mr. Fox. And that's all. But it's in some kind of what do you call it? Like somebody wrote, not in a review, or maybe a review of the play, that there was this mention of the awful tale of Mr. Fox in the play. So
it's awful.
apparently, it's been around a long time.
Yeah,
you know, and it is a scary story.
Susan Gordon tells that as well, but she doesn't call it Mr. Fox. I'm pretty sure that it has a different name.
Oh,
it's a little bit different, but
yeah,
the basics are the same.
Yeah, and the version I've told on stage is a bit longer because it describes barrels of things
right.
that are in that room, and it's pretty awful. It's much scarier, you know.
Wow.
Ooh, yeah.
Oh.
Very scary.
There was another story about warfare that I considered telling today, but it's longer and more complicated. And it involves warfare between human beings and great apes. And I don't know if it's, I think it is a traditional African tale, but I haven't researched that one. So I don't know if it's an original of Baba Jamal Karam or it's on, he tells it on the CD that I have, but I don't know if it's a traditional tale or not. I should look it up, but it's about ongoing conflict and warfare between these two communities, the great apes and the human community. The human community lives at the base of the mountain, and the mountain gorillas have the rest of the mountain, and they have a particular plant. I think he calls it a crater plant that they depend on for their food, and human beings don't eat crater plants ordinarily, but if times are tough, they encroach on the great apes' territory and basically decimate the area, taking whatever they want, whatever is available, without any sense of whether those plants are going to come back, whether any plants are going to come back or not, or if they're taking too much and will destroy the environment there. And the leaders of the two groups as become friends as children. One helps the other in a life and death situation, but they agree they will be lifelong friends, but then they don't see each other very much and they grow up and have their own children. And meanwhile, the situation between the two communities has gotten dire. They are in conflict all the time. And the leader of the humans has a new baby, and that baby is kidnapped during a battle with the great apes. And he goes after the warriors that took the child and finds the place where he hears his child cry, and the leader of the great apes appears and challenges him and asks for the child's name. And the human leader has named his child after the leader of the great apes that he had this childhood friendship with. And the great ape is taken aback, didn't recognize him, first of all, but they have a conversation and eventually they are reconciled. So they don't become good friends again, but they agree to work together, and it changes the relationship of the two communities. And the final line is something like, they still argued and bickered and had their conflicts, but they never fought again. And I thought that was a nice tribute for Martin Luther King. But the whole thing about them being great apes, that was a little difficult for me.
Sure. I thought, wouldn't it be wonderful if an animal spoke to you? And I thought that's it would be just so incredible to.
Yeah, I was just reading, you know, I read the Washington Post pretty much cover to cover, but only on Sundays.
Yeah.
And what I spend the most time on is the book reviews. And there's a new book about deer in the United States, North American deer, and human beings' relationship with them, and that they are one of the few remaining wild animals that are not afraid of people in the same way that most other wild animals are, and encroach upon human territory regularly and die for it. And that it included our statistics on the number of deer that are hunted every year, and which is far exceeded by the number of deer who are killed by automobiles and traffic every year. And there's something inherent in the way they experience the world that they just are not able to cope with automobiles and trucks. There's
Go
something
figure.
The speed that those vehicles travel is just outside their experience, and they just don't have any defense against something approaching at that speed. But this woman has spent half her life researching deer. It was really fascinating. I may actually, well, I would try to get the book from the library. But in fact, I was reading that just before I decided that I would tell the Anansi story. But one of the reasons I fell down that rabbit hole was I was thinking about the great apes and how to make the great apes more sympathetic, I guess. And not...
Oh, and you mean in that story?
In the other story.
Oh, yeah. Well, they apparently the great ape in reality, great apes are very sympathetic and are very not dangerous to humans. They shy away from humans as much as possible.
Did you ever meet the storyteller Ann Thomas?
Oh, I absolutely.
Did you hear her tell stories?
I met her at your place.
Okay. And did you hear her tell her story about the great apes, about the gorillas that she
Yes. visited?
That's an amazing business.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, I was very touched by her, and then I was very saddened that she died.
Yeah. And she was a friend of Andy's too, Andy Alfred Irwin.
She was just marvelous at your place. I got to speak with her afterwards, and I was very impressed with her.
Yeah, I forgot that she had been at my house. She told
She was such a friendly person.
More than one. I think she told twice.
Yeah.
But I had forgotten she'd been at my
house. Yeah, and she died shortly after she performed at Hagerstown.
Yeah, she knew at that time that she...
That she was very ill.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess that would... Yeah, this is a cool thing. I guess it would be a blessing if you knew.
I don't know. Not having.
Well, I think it would. I think it would. Yeah, you know, because recently I had a really bad day. My legs are in terrible shape, and I'm hoping tomorrow I have a doctor's appointment. Tomorrow he's going to tell me what the magic is and how he's going to fix my legs. I don't expect to ever be able to do anything special with my legs anymore, but I'd be happy not to worry.
Mm-hmm.
But last week, one day, I was in such low energy, and it got worse and worse and worse. I wasn't in pain. You know, I wasn't like I couldn't say, oh, this hurts or that hurts. But I was so lack of energy. And as the day went on, it got, you know, I got less and less and And at one point, sitting in the chair where I'm sitting right now, I thought, maybe I'm dying. And maybe this is what it feels like if a person is just old and he's going to pass, you know, just running out of energy. Because that's what it felt like.
Wow.
I felt like I had low energy. I don't know exactly what happened. Something happened. And it was after supper. But all of a sudden, I got this incredible burst of energy. In fact, Terry said, What is wrong with you? You were just like, whoa, and now you're doing things. I got up, was doing things, you know. Anyway, and I didn't tell Terry that I thought I was dying because I thought that was be a little dramatic, you know.
Instead, but it was, you decided you would announce it on the radio.
Yeah, which is, you know, people will say, "Well, he's a storyteller; he just made it up." You know. But I mean, the thought crossed my mind. Maybe this is what it's like, if you know, because you hear if people were, have, you know, find you visit some old relative and you go away from them and you find that they passed away that day, you know, that evening or something.
And yeah.
Well, we guess that's the way to go. And someplace in my background, I have a Blessed Mother ticket. So, you know, I did a novena once when I was young, which guaranteed that if I completed that novena, I would have a pleasant death.
Really?
Yes.
A guarantee. Did you get a certificate?
Oh, when I was a kid, we got, you know, if you did this and this and this and this, you guaranteed that you will do this and that, you know. The church had just a number of wonderful things. Do you know of a person named Stephen Fry?
Yes. How do I know him? I don't.
He's an author and a commentator. He's an author. He's written things and he's an actor. And he's also an atheist. I just recently love him. I've listened to him. A lot of his speeches on YouTube, and I don't remember the name of his books, but he's very popular, he did a thing that's on YouTube about the Catholic Church,
mm-hmm.
and it is the most scathing, professional, and wonderful telling about the atrocities by the Catholic Church. And not just like the Crusades and stuff, but about how children are taught, you know, and I was, and it scarred me for a long time, about how I was going to be burned in hell forever because I was I wasn't worth anything. And I was born in sin and I had to be baptized and saved and if I didn't do everything that I was told according to the church's rules, I was going to burn in hell forever. And right now, I just got a chill thinking about it, how terrified. I spent a lot of terrified nights going to sleep in the third floor of our very cold house in Baltimore, huddled under my covers with my head under the covers so I wouldn't see the people coming to get me.
Oh my. So Stephen Fry. Okay. I'll check it out.
Yeah. If you ever look on YouTube and just type his name in, you'll see. And he's a wonderful speaker. He doesn't criticize individuals. He says, if a person has faith, I admire them. If they have beliefs, that's fine. I'm against organized religion. I'm against organized religion because it's based on lies. And this thing went on for 30 minutes. I'm telling you, I stood up and applauded three times. And I'm in my own house at my comfortable chair.
On that note, as we are ending our tribute to Reverend Martin Luther King.
Yes.
I need a time check from you because I think we're out of time.
58 minutes and 10 seconds.
All right. So this is Fanny Crawford.
And Stasz Jolkowski.
Closing out the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. We are independent community radio broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia, Hagerstown, Maryland, and Martinsburg, West Virginia, offering our listeners a window into the world of telling by traditional and non-traditional tellers, encouraging you, our listening community, to share, preserve, and expand all of our stories. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned for John Case and...
We're going to be doing some... speeches by Dr. King.
All right.
Oh, good.
Also some by Malcolm X, or one. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Also a lecture that was given in about 1980-something, but at the University of Southern California by Angela Davis.
Right.
And there's a really interesting reading of excerpts from Frederick Douglass's autobiography that I had too. So I put that on a playlist, and I think we're going to be doing that for part of the day.
Okay.
Anyway, that's the main thing.
Yeah. Neat.